Blog Talk Radio.
Don't you know we're talking about a revolution now? Don't you know we're talking about a revolution now? While they're standing in the welfare line, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment line, sitting around waiting for a promotion. Don't you know, talking about a revolution now? Who are people gonna rise up and get their share? Gonna rise up and take what's there.
Good evening, and thank you for joining us on the Wise Women Media, the radio show. You can catch us online at wisewomenmedia.blogspot.com. That website has a list of all our shows and links to the podcasts, a list of our sponsors, and hit us up on our social media, which is also linked there. We're on Twitter and we are on Facebook. I did a very interesting interview with Pat LaMarche and Diane Nealon, the Babes of Wrath, last night. And just wanted to let you all know before you hear this pre-recorded interview that they will challenge everything you thought you already knew about homelessness, poverty, and hunger, and how it affects so many, especially the silent, invisible ones, which are the children. So I'm going to go ahead and cue that up. In the meantime, if you have any questions or any media inquiries that you would like to direct to them, you can see the complete show description and how to reach them at wisewomenmedia.blogspot.com, or feel free to send me an email at Anita Stewart, A-N-I-T-A-S-T-E-W-A-R-T, at gmail.com, and I will make sure everything that I get that's emailed to me will be forwarded directly to either Diane or Pat. So enjoy. If you have any comments, you can also send those via email, and I will be sure to respond to each and every one of them. And enjoy this, and please be sure to viral it around. Thanks.
Well, I want to thank you very much for joining us again on the Wise Women Media radio show. I have Diane Nealon and Pat LaMarche. Both are the Babes of Wrath, and they have been working across the country with the homeless, the needy, the hungry, the poor, and they're going to fill us in on some things that are happening. These are such critical times for the poor and needy, and it seems like everything that's happening legally and in regards to our government is they've really become so downtrodden and just creating situations to make the poor even poorer. You gals have the floor. You have the information. Fill us in a little bit on some of the trends, what you've been doing this year, a little bit about the Ice Bites Tour and why you call yourselves the Babes of Wrath, and I'm just going to turn it over to you. So who wants to start?
Josh, you go first.
Oh, yeah.
I guess I'll go backwards, and then we'll bring us forward to now. We'll start with how 2013 went.
Okay.
Well, the world's bleak, but we spent a lot of time together, which was wonderful, and worked on some things. And that's basically when we coined the Babes of Wrath to begin with. This last January, we took off on a southwestern tour of the southwestern United States, retraced the steps of the Joad family from the Grapes of Wrath, the fictitious Joad family from Steinbeck's epic about poverty. And so that's when we became the Babes of Wrath, because we followed that trip along from the Grapes of Wrath. And, you know, the discussion we have is so bleak that it's fun to have some fun with it and to have fun with the name like that. Prior to that, we had done a southeastern tour, and we called ourselves the Southern Discomfort Tour. So now whatever the babes do, I think we'll probably keep Babes of Wrath forever because it's so fitting. Hey, Diane. and it's a ear catcher, and then on top of that, we do other things. And that's when, so we worked through the year on our various projects together and apart, and brought us up to just before Thanksgiving when we did, actually it's called the Frost Bites Tour, which is a bit of a play on frostbite, but also frost does bite, being cold bites, being homeless bites, it all bites, it sucks. All the language and the vernacular of a really nasty, ugly reality is what plagues the poor, the ever-burgeoning collection of poor people at the bottom of the pyramid in the United States. And so we've worked to highlight that, and we've taken off in our separate directions. I shudder to think how many miles we've traveled together and apart this year, Diane.
Well, yeah, quite a few.
So we've worked on different projects and written a lot about what we've come up against, and I guess that would bring us up to some of our most current writing. Maybe not. Okay, so let's stop in September, and then we'll work from September forward, because that's when Diane really hunkered down and started working on her newest documentary, which I have seen little clips from. But it's very exciting. And so, Diane, why don't you talk about your new documentary?
Well, as unbelievable as this might sound, I was hired by the Texas State Department of Education to... it gets better, because their homeless education program, the McKinney-Vento Homeless Education Program in the state, wants me to interview families and youth who are living in doubled-up situations, which the enlightened people in this country think of as homelessness, because that's exactly what it is. And it's the largest segment of the homeless family and youth population. I mean, they're in this doubled-up situation, insecurely housed, bouncing around. A lot of issues come up in their day-to-day life, and it's basically an unrecognized condition in too many places, including in schools. So they hired me to interview families and youth that are going through this, and so I spent 6 weeks in Texas driving across the back roads of Texas, interviewing dozens of families and youth that are in the situation. And it is absolutely, even for me, and I've been in this kind of work with homeless families and individuals for 30 years now, it was even mind-blowing and heart-ripping for me. And so I'm now in the process of, you know, the editing process, which is just reliving these interviews. But I'm quite excited about the project. It's called Worn Out Welcome Mat. And I think it will just set people's, just set people a spinning, because they will realize how prevalent this kind of homelessness is in every community.
When is the project slated for completion?
Well, I'm working furiously on it now because I would like to be able to really have it finished in early March. But I don't want to jinx it. But I've got a lot of editing time to put into it before it gets ready, and it's got to go through some approval stages and all. But it's I've done some previews, and the clips are on my Heroes YouTube page, and I think the stories that I've posted so far, they're just little short ones, but it will give people an idea of how bleak this kind of life is for kids, for parents, and I think it's worth paying attention to.
Well, what kind of repercussions have you both seen in regards to the food stamp cutback, which has affected everyone, I think, that gets food stamps? Everyone either, it just depends on the specific amounts that they're getting less of help now.
I think the funniest part is that Walmart is off 20%. And
you really can feel sorry for them, and it's
But there's a possibility change will happen if Walmart loses.
Sure.
Nobody gives a rat's butt about little Billy or little Joey, but Walmart's business is off 20%. It tells you a lot about who Walmart's catering to. Obviously, who they gear it towards. That's the thing I guess that's most frustrating as an advocate is you would. I can't imagine what it does to small mom-and-pop stores. There are lots of them that accept food stamps. There are lots of them that pay cash for food stamps, 30 cents on the dollar, so people can buy tampons. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff in the real world going on out there. But the fact that this huge power retailer, 20% of their business
is impacted. That's a big amount. I mean, and I can tell you.
Elimination of food stamps, though. Not by eliminating them, by a decrease of them.
Right.
Yeah.
I live in a pretty rural community, and we have several Walmarts here, and basically they're the only stores where you can get anything for 20 miles around. I mean, people that are poor that live in a rural community don't have a lot of choices. They can't drive 35 miles to get to, a mom-and-pop store in the next community over. But going by some of those stores over the holidays, I didn't see an extraordinary amount of parking and cars trying to get into the parking lot or anything like that. I definitely think that there's, just being in some of the shops, there was just not a lot of business being conducted this holiday season.
Well, and I've been in the homes of the families that are losing, a lot of money in their monthly budget, because of these cuts. And all I know is there's no fat on the bone, and it's going to cause even more dire consequences in each of these households that's losing out this little tiddly amount of money that they've been getting for food stamps. It's nutritionally it's disastrous. It causes them to make some pretty tough decisions, and it's causing an enormous amount of stress on the level of the people that are dependent on the food stamps.
And more people are dependent on the food stamps now. Even the military. I mean, that's been going on for some time with military dependents, but that has not abated. I think that's even more so now, isn't it?
Well, it is, and it's interesting because I interviewed a sergeant in the Army at Fort Hood, and she had her 13-year-old nephew dumped on her doorstep, and he was homeless, and his parents kicked him out, and, you know, so she's picking him up in her household. She's barely able to make it. She's got a son living at home, and she's barely able to make it on her salary, and, you know, the amount of economic pressure on our troops, you know, people just don't realize. And she said, it's kind of interesting, she said, you know, when a family is having trouble, you know, whether it's marital problems or economic or all of the above, and they need to farm their kids out to somewhere, they will often pick somebody in the military to do it. You know, if I have a cousin who's in the Army, I'm going to, you know, send my kids over there, thinking that they're stable and have a decent income. And what people don't realize is, you know, that these kids don't qualify for the military-based benefits. They, you know, they can't get food stamps right away. I mean, it's just really a disaster for the families that are taking, you know, their cousins or whoever in. And, you know, these are families in the military that are worried about deployment and all of the other things. And now they're becoming the dumping ground for the families that can't take care of their kids. And it's just a mess.
I live in a community that is most of the people that live here are pretty well-to-do, but, you know, I've seen a lot of, you know, specific situations that don't always be what you would call the norm for this particular neighborhood. One particular man and his wife, they're in their 70s, they've empty nested, come to find out that their adult children have some substance abuse problems, and now this older couple who thought, you know, should be going on a cruise and enjoying their retirement, have, I think it's 5 grandchildren at home dumped on them, and now they're in a very financially bad way, and they're just doing the best they can to feed the kids. And I work with him and his wife locally at St. Vincent de Paul through the local Catholic Church. But this is happening to the elders, too.
That's an epidemic in itself. I mean, that's a horrible epidemic.
Yeah. So I wanted to know, what areas, are there ways where you can gauge the areas, like when you went into the southeast and the southwest, which specific hot spots there where there's more homeless or less homeless, or is it pretty much everywhere?
Yeah. I think that it's interesting. You'll see her now about one town or one city. I think I saw a story. Phoenix has done reported to have eradicated basically chronic veteran homelessness. It gives everybody a chuckle. For the people who want to be counted and who avail themselves of opportunities as they are put forth, they have pretty much taken care of everybody, I guess, is the message that you could actually, you know, boil down. It doesn't have anything to do with the people who don't want to be treated the way they're treated in order to be given housing or have a better opportunity. Anyway, all of that aside, you'll hear about an individual town or somebody, or they're even saying now the entire state of Utah is doing a better job. And there are things Utah does better at. For example, they have the smallest gap between the rich and the poor in how much they pay in taxes.
Okay.
The poor still pay more percentage of their income in taxes than the rich do, but it's the least different.
Mm-hmm. The least
gap. And what that means is if like the worst town, the worst state, I can't remember which one because there's so many bad ones, but the worst state, the poor pay 17% of their income in overall taxes, so their gasoline tax, their sales tax, all the taxes, property taxes, and the rich pay 2.8. So that means is if you make $10,000 a year and you pay 17% in overall in taxes, you have $8,300 to work with. If you make $1 million and you pay 3%, you have $970,000 to work with. So we have this messed up tax structure. Everybody thinks the poor don't pay taxes when the poor are paying a disproportionately very large. There isn't a state where they don't pay more of their income, even though
right.
the rich have so much more of their income to dispose of. So you hear these little news stories, and I guess that's what's kind of tweaking me this week. Although there's a lot more story to tell about the stories of what Diane's been up to, but what's tweaking me this week is these news stories. Like, for example, you sent us one tonight, Anita, about women are overwhelmingly making up now the homeless and the impoverished.
That's not news.
It's not news, and that's what is making me cranky, is they are selling us this crap in December of 2013 like news.
It's brand new, right. For people that want to look up that article that Pat is referencing, it's women are swelling the ranks of people living in extreme poverty in America. And that article is on alternet.org, alternet.org.
I wanted to tell them, you know, you could just stop with women are swelling. Because, of course, they are.
We're doing that.
Women are swell.
But it was written by, let's see, it says it's reprinted from Open Democracy with their permission. So I'm not... the author was Ruth Rosen. So I'm kind of wondering, you know, when this article actually came out. It might not be new at all. So, December 16th, 2013. So why would they print something like this if it's old news?
Because people still don't know it. Because it's news to the people reading it, and that's what spins the news cycle. And what that means is the hard work that Diane and I and a lot of other people, countless people, have been trying to do about getting the word out, it's not working. And it's sad because you still see stupid crap. Like a woman I really love and respect had on her Facebook page today, no illegal aliens get anything until every homeless person has a house. Okay,
yeah.
So they got a new boogeyman. They got a hungry family from Honduras to blame. That's not who's to blame. Who's to blame is the 400 or 500 jets that don't work that are rotting next to a air base in Afghanistan right now. Who's to blame is the enormous tax cuts to the wealthy. Who's to blame is the incredibly low minimum wage. There's tons of blame to go around. But if they can keep getting us to believe that it's that poor slob from Honduras who's grandmother is starving to death and he sends her half his paycheck, oh dear Lord, then we've got an enemy.
Right.
Yeah. You know, I think stories like the one that I blogged about on Alternet about the, Tampa, Hillsborough County.
Let's hear about Tampa since, you know, we're broadcasting from Tampa.
Well, you know, I probably am going to get myself banned from the city limits, but,
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, when I read the story and the editorial that just ripped this, which I was glad to read, at least they were on the right side of the story, and they've been reporting stories on a regular basis of this sort at the Tampa Bay Tribune, I was absolutely ready to jump in my little motorhome and speed on down there, and I wasn't sure what I was going to do, but I figured out by the time I got down there. Basically what happens, and this has been going on since the mid-70s, where if a family or if somebody is eligible for disability and has been, you know, approved and they're just waiting for their check, which typically means a back check, back pay, for the time that, you know, from the very beginning that they've been applying for the disability, if they've been helped by a government agency, the government agency has the legal right to claw the money back from the family when they get their check. Now, in Florida, I guess 10 counties actually use this do this practice, but most of them will delegate that type of, you know, you help this family while they're waiting. We know it's going to happen. But the nonprofit agencies that get to do that work cannot claw the money back. So there are times when the money does not get clawed back and the family or the individual might get helped. Well, good for the Tampa Bay Tribune. They focused on the story of a family that's been homeless, unemployment, eviction, and all the whole nine yards that goes along with that. This family was helped by the county homeless recovery office or something that they call themselves. And they get placed in an absolute, I don't know if we can say the four-letter word on your radio show, but you know what word I'm saying, hole, where this family is living with, you know, insects and all leaking trailer. I mean, it just really sounded horrible. Not only did the county place them in this uninspected, uninhabitable place, but when it came that their little four-year-old boy who's deaf is going to qualify for his disability and was going to get $2,700 in back pay, the county clawed back $2,000 of it, which basically meant the family is not getting out of this crap hole that they were in, and is now the county ended up pulling the money that they were providing to help that family, so the family became even more homeless. And this is money that when they claw it back from this little family with a four-year-old deaf boy, the money doesn't go back to help other homeless families and individuals. No. The money goes into the county's general revenue fund, where it can be spent wisely by the county official.
Now, you just
have to think that I just, my blood was boiling by the time I finished reading that.
That's just pure and adulterated theft. And
I'm
actually
shameless.
Doing a on this. The last thing that I heard about this homeless recovery program through Hillsborough County, I heard that it was either eliminated, the whole program,
they had talked about it.
So I'm trying to find out if it's been eliminated, then where the hell is that money going? And number two, is that true, or what part of the programs are they cutting out?
I did read that it's going to be eliminated and that they're going to be farming out those duties to the nonprofits sector. So I would assume if things would go the way they're supposed to go, that the money that, you know, would come then from tax dollars and would be helping the families and it wouldn't get clawed back. So, you know, that could be something good. And Mr. Merrill, the county president or executive or whatever he is, you know, I've got somebody that's delivering that article that I wrote to tomorrow to his office. And in there I put that I would be willing to come down and do some sensitivity training for some of the, you know, county officials and other people in Tampa area and Hillsborough County that seem to have just absolutely, you know, they drank the mean Kool-Aid, and they've really gotten on the list of, you know, like the National Coalition for the Homeless, and I'm on the board there, and they talk about Tampa in such a way that, you know, would not be good for the reputation of that city. And, you know, so I'm offering to come down and do a little sensitivity training.
Well,
I think
St. Pete is another...
Wait a minute. Diane, doesn't she understand someone might be one of these people, one of these deaf four-year-old children on their way to see Mickey Mouse? Don't you understand? That
Can't
be you. Talk about unfeeling and uncaring.
St. Pete is another city where, you know, Reverend Bruce, who's on the Green Shadow Cabinet, he's been working with the Poor People's Economic Human Rights Campaign with Sheree Honkala and so many others, and he's really been one of the, you know, spearheads of all these different projects going on in St. Pete, but they've arrested people right off the street. So it's criminal to be homeless. And for for those of you out there that may be listening from other places, a lot of homeless people come to Florida in the wintertime because they simply know they're not going to freeze to death on the street here.
Anita, let me point out, though, there's a lot of people who live in Florida that are Florida residents that have become homeless. And, you know, we toss that little myth about people traveling, and, you know, there are some of the, you know, people that have the wherewithal to travel who end up either getting down to Florida and becoming homeless, or, you know, a few, I think, would travel however they can get there to be homeless down there. Sure, they're not, you know, homeless people aren't stupid, but most of them don't have the ability to get down there. And the other thing is, it's like most of the people that are homeless in Florida are invisible. They're the families, they're the youth. They're not just the guys standing out on the street corner, you know, panhandling. It's homelessness is an epidemic in Florida. And, you know, thanks to HUD and some of the other, you know, entities, we've really been able to, you know, bamboozle the public about, you know, how big the problem is.
And we've even had the Food Not Bombs people arrested down here in Florida, not just here in the Tampa Bay area, but in Orlando and other places for setting up feedings in public parks for, you know, for the homeless people. And these people end up doing time for giving people, poor people, food. It's just crazy.
In the last 25 years, the director of Food Not Bombs has sent three of them in jail.
Wow.
For feeding people.
Now tell me a little bit about these articles that have come out about homeless veterans, because you had said that there was probably some exaggeration or untruths in regards to that as well. And why would veterans be helped before children? That's another question I had after you and I had commented about that on Facebook.
Yeah, there are a couple of things, but homeless veterans are, homeless doesn't mean powerless, and homeless doesn't mean worthless, and homeless doesn't mean without option or resource or independent thinking. And when we put veterans through a certain number of challenges in the United States as homeless people, they've often seen much worse in the places we put them when we sent them to war. So, you know, if it comes to a woman and her three kids eating out of a dumpster or a homeless veteran eating out of a dumpster, the homeless veteran's been trained to eat bugs and everything else. I mean, these guys are tough. They're the hierarchy of the homeless people, is what I call them, in a way that would probably make sense.
Remember, there's women, too. Women veterans.
There are women. And there are women with children who are homeless. But just to say, but the women were also trained to have adversity far beyond what the average, you know, young woman has a couple of kids and her husband beats the living daylights out of her until she finally leaves and has nowhere to go, or any other things that might cause homelessness, but, you know, working two part-time jobs and not enough money. These people don't have training to live in the woods or to eat rotten food, or really literally things we train people in the military to do. But so in many cases, the homeless veterans are A, more recognizable, more identifiable. They're far more recognizable than homeless children because they, to a much larger degree, do not fear being outed as homeless. A family with little kids doesn't want to be outed as having children because they don't want the kids taken away from them. So there are a lot of things that drive homeless children into hiding. That humiliation, fear, add on. But on top of that, federal government has earmarked a lot more money per capita for homeless veterans. So there's a lot more money out there to get them into permanent housing, transitional housing, mental health help, physical health help. They have access to health care that the average person does not have. The veteran just has, even though they're crapped on and they don't have anywhere near enough, they have a better opportunity for assistance, care, and recognition without it being punishing. They're more sympathetic. You know, even though, is there a better story than the one Diane just told about a four-year-old who's deaf, for God's sake? How much worse does his life need to get before it doesn't make any sense to be you know, to be screwing him and punishing his parents. But we are a punishing society. Just like that woman who posted the thing about it, you know, it's an illegal alien that's caused homelessness in this country. That's the biggest lie I've read in 2 years, you know? So
that's, I know, it's crazy. And it's just unbelievable how the media has framed all of this, just with this one article that we mentioned with about the women and families, because you all have known that for a long time. But what are some other misconceptions that are brought on about by the media about homeless, and in particular homeless families?
Well, I'd have to say, first of all, I mean, I've been amazed that they're reporting the statistics that the Department of Education has come out with, that there's, you know, almost 1.2 million identified homeless students in this country. And I think you can look at that statistic, and right around the same time that came out, HUD comes out with their report that there's 610,000 homeless individuals that were counted at their point-in-time count last January. So you just kind of, first of all, if you're doing any kind of math at all, you go 610,000 homeless people or 1.2 million homeless students, which doesn't include younger siblings, it doesn't include older siblings or parents. And then,
right,
you know, but nobody in the media seems to pick up on that to the point where they're going, huh. And then every December 15th, the U.S. Conference of Mayors comes out with their hunger and homelessness report, and this has put a bug up my butt for just a long time, because I've been on the receiving end when I was running a shelter, the mayor sent over this form, says we're supposed to be participating in this, fill it out, you know, put the numbers in, and I could have put, you know, we're getting people from the moon, and nothing, you know, gets checked out or anything like that. And they, all this data goes back, and it's all piecemeal, and none of it is really relevant when you get down to it. And it goes back into this report, and the mayors come out, and they say something that's basically ho-hum. Yeah, homelessness is bad. Hunger's bad. It's sort of getting worse around our cities. And, you know, it gets picked up, and then they start using these statistics from the HUD report. And, you know, it's like, when are we ever going to really get any kind of sense? Not that I think that you can get this total picture of how many homeless people we have, but when are we going to say, oh, my God, there are like millions of homeless kids in our country? So the media hasn't really picked up on that, although I want to give a hat tip to the New York Times, at least. You know, they 5 days in a row in December, they featured a story about a young girl. It was a very well-written, well-photographed story. But it's about a young girl in New York City in a shelter. And, you know, it's easily dismissed as that. But at least it got some
significant. Was it the story about Dasani?
Yeah, Dasani.
The little black girl, she was so sweet.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, I would just love to just see her and just put my arms around her. That was a wonderful story. And
it was
sure
a wonderful series. And, it, you know, but the sad thing is people will say, is New York City, what do you expect? As a black girl, what do you expect? You know, you just kind of go.
The New York Times, what do you expect?
I read some portions of that, and I'd like to go back and read the whole thing. And of course, it's archived for anybody out there that's listening that would like to read that. And just, I'm sure all you have to do is Google Dasani and New York Times, and it'll pull up, you know, the story.
Yeah.
You know what's frustrating, I think, is the fact that the three of us call technically media, right? I have a radio program in Pennsylvania, so I guess I'm still media, but for the most part, we're bloggers, we do podcasts, we do things, and we're considered the media now. And the real media, the New York Times, the Washington Post, the ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox, you know, all the media that is supposed to have paid correspondents, paid paying people to be the fourth estate to report on things. They are biased, if nothing else. They use bloggers and podcasters like us as the filling free media, so that they don't have to pay anybody and they can still fill the pages. I'm taking advantage of it like anybody would who's trying to get their message out. But it means that everything is subjective. Are you kidding me? The media is on the side of the government against people like Edward Snowden. There is absolutely no real media anymore. They're embedded. George Bush, when he waged war in Afghanistan and Iraq, was brilliant. He embedded all the best journalists with the military so completely that the military were saving their lives, and we were supposed to be getting an objective take on it. You know?
Right.
I mean, this is never the way it should ever have been done, and this is what the for-profit corporate media has become. And did you read Edward Snowden's thing that he put out for Christmas? He said,
brilliant.
No child born today will understand privacy. There will not be a concept of privacy. And so we've got this Orwellian time, war is peace, you know, love is hate. We've got this, the Pope is vilified by Christians who say that he's not Christian enough. He should be telling people to pray instead of to act. Well, if that was the case and they're Christians, then Jesus Christ should have been able to save everybody's soul by praying and didn't have to get crucified. Their logic, the only people they can confuse are each other. Everybody else is scratching their heads going, what the hell is wrong with these people? But I'm sorry, I said the four-letter words. But that's what's wrong, is we don't have a media. So when we try and get even a clear, objective, and I think Diane tries pretty darn hard to just tell the truth and be objective, and so do I, and so do you, Anita, but when we're working on these things, on these issues, and we're telling the truth as loud as we can, we're dwarfed by this overarching BS that's coming out of Fox News, and they're telling in every, for 4 days, all we talk about is whether or not Santa's white.
Yeah.
Oh, that was hilarious. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
It's
hilarious, but so absolutely... absolutely nauseating when you just think of the amount of airtime given to, I can't even,
that
can't even
woman,
call it dribble.
That anchor is probably making $250,000 a year. That anchor is making $250,000 a year to consume.
And she's saying stupid stuff like that. I mean, it's just unbelievable. You know, I've had so many people come to my page. My Facebook page is pretty open, and I've always left it that way, thinking, well, I want to hear everybody's take and hear everybody's little opinion. And unfortunately, I've had to tighten the screws to, you know, my privacy settings just lately. But, you know, this takes it off of the homeless thing and puts it back on the environmental. I've posted some environmental things just over the past 4 or 5 days that have had me literally not attacked, but people have come up and, you know, they're the climate deniers. And instead of going to do the research, I'll point them to the research, I'll point them to the videos, I'll point them to the books, the authors, whatever it is they need to be looking at. It's like extreme denial and attack the messenger. And I'm at the point now where, you know, believe what you want to believe, fine, but I'm going to sit here and talk about the environment and other things that are going wrong in the world. But the environment, of course, is a big one for me. And these people are literally, these are people I know that I've met in person, which
but
is
you're making
really
my point, too. You're making my point, too, Anita, which is you're just telling the truth.
Yeah.
You're not some alarmist who's saying, oh, well, I think I'll make up a big bad boogeyman and get everyone to believe in him. No, you're just telling the truth. And the
first thing I said was, do you respect the science? Can you even look at the scientific reports or the videos of the scientists and the doctors themselves speaking? Doesn't that even persuade you to the point where you would want to listen? They don't even want to listen. So it's an extreme
case of what is called cognitive dissonance. Cognitive dissonance is like denial and superdrive. And that's where these people are at. They're in complete, utter denial that this is happening on this planet and that it could somehow affect them. And I encourage everybody to look up the meaning of that term, cognitive dissonance. And that is what we're dealing with here, where they will not believe the truth. You could present all the evidence in the world in front of them, and they'll look at you right square in the eye and say, where's the evidence?
Yeah. Now, there's a great book, and you should get the author of it on your show. I'll send you the details on it because I don't have them right in front of me. But there's a great book. I interviewed the author, and it's Why the Republican Brain Can't Understand Science. And, you know, he's picking on Republicans, but it's not necessary. It's basically just the climate deniers, the evolution deniers. You know, you pick the people that deny real science, and that's who he's talking about. And some of them are highly educated. It's not an ignorance of the facts. It's a lack of capacity to understand that they can't fix the problem. It's a genetic thing that's come down through evolution, which is even more frustrating than them, that there are people who are the type of people who are in the tribe who must be able to solve the problems of the tribe. And if they cannot solve the problems of the tribe, the only thing they can do is pretend the problems of the tribe do not exist. And
isn't it funny, the people that do this, I haven't met a single female. It's all been male.
Well, then you haven't met Ann Coulter, and you haven't met, you know, there are tons of women, that stupid woman who insisted Santa was white. And
Megan, what's her name?
Yeah, you just haven't met them because you don't hang around with stupid women, and I admire you for that, and I'm glad that I'm with women you do hang around with.
I'm glad we're on the right side on that equation.
Yeah, but there are tons of women out there. It's literally a branch of evolution that kind of brain, the kind of brain that cannot say, well, I can't solve the whole problem, but I can whittle away at it and accept the fact that I will die without this problem solved. That's a really different way of thinking than from how these people can think. And so this guy's a microbiologist. I mean, he's got all this data to support it, and I read the book, and it was really complicated and fun to read. But, I mean, he literally goes step by step. These are a type of person. And literally, if they can't solve the problem or they cannot know someone to solve the problem, they can't accept that there's a problem that big. And to think that there's a brain like that, and that's really what we're working against, is a whole pile of people with these, like, brains? Well, you don't realize that they're a whole
pile. The homeless problem and homeless families and children, I think a lot of the denial that might be wrapped around that is the fact that so many people are so close to being there that they're afraid that if they focus on that problem and look at that problem, they will become that problem. Am I right in thinking that way? Have I?
You know what, Anita, you hit the exact reason why I titled my book Crossing the Line. I mean, it was that whole concept of if I cross that line, I'll catch it, I'll become it, and I'll be homeless. And it was just one of those concepts that I've seen, and I've talked to so many people over the years that have that fear. And yet, when you look at the reality of how, you know, 80% of the people in this country are pretty darn close to being homeless, if they're not already, and how many people know somebody who's in homeless situations, you just have to kind of step back and wonder why are we in such denial of the problem? And the denial comes from, you know, the president, Congress, all the way down, but in our communities that, you know, it's just gotten to be such a distorted problem that we haven't reported on the issue proportionately how it's families, as opposed to just the guy on the street corner, which is probably 10% of the problem, you know, that 90% of the problem we haven't even looked at. and yet we're, you know, just, we're crazy.
And this is probably a reason why in so many cities, especially like before the Olympics or a big thing like the RNC or whatever, they're arresting the homeless or getting them out of the way or trying to move them out of the city so people don't have to see them. They become visible.
Well, it's
I just want to throw out there that they did that for the DNC also.
Yeah.
They did it. Both the RNC and the DNC did it. I'm just going to throw that out there because I'm an equal opportunity picker on her and ratter out her.
Go ahead.
As we all know, it doesn't matter if there's an R or a D after your name or anything like that. That's to me, it's the twin powers of evil, the two-party duopoly that, you know, it's just my personal opinion. It doesn't work for the people anymore.
The little D and the little R doesn't know it. That's what's so sad. They're the good guys. The little D and the little R and the little I and the little G and the little everybody else, all the other, they're the good guys. And these two huge, huge, super obnoxious, powerful parties, right? These two political
with all the money.
The leadership is so corrupt, and I don't care how good you are when you get into that leadership, you're going to go bad. And, you know, I'd love to have a dime for every person that says, you should have run as a Democrat. You could have won, or you should have. Yeah, but I would have become them. You can't be in that system and not say, oh, yeah, well, I guess I better do what I'm told. You're the one guy who gave me $500 million, right?
Yeah, because at some point you're going to get your hands dirty. If you run for Congress with the major two parties with all the good intentions, you're going to have your hands get dirty. There's going to be somebody that you have to pay or they have to pay you or something.
And that's why I'm going to take it back to the Pope real quick. The Pope.
Oh yeah, please do.
Right now. The Pope has a billion. I did the math the other day as I was like, oh, are there 40 million Catholics, 400 million Catholics? There are a billion Catholics, not Christian, Catholics in the world. If this Pope convinces a billion people, about a third of them live in South America, if he convinces a billion people that the rich are bad and that the average poor person is the one who's got a soul worth saving because the people who made it to the top compromised theirs. If he can get a billion people to believe that with peace and love, just like Nelson Mandela, who spoke so highly of the Pope before he died, that through all the really important peace, love, understanding, and caring, but reject this oligarchical, power-hungry, violent, evil world, that, oh, by the way, is owned by McDonald's, Walmart, and all the rest of them, and Halliburton, that a billion people being mobilized by this man, even just to care about each other, regardless of faith.
Just to move slightly towards that.
You can love an atheist, and atheists can go to heaven. You can't judge a gay person. Women have feminine wisdom. I'm getting whiplash from this man.
Right.
Long overdue.
It's been pretty surprising what he's said lately, and I think he's rejuvenating a spiritual community that really was just kind of lackluster maybe 6 months ago, and so many Catholics were not involved, and now things are changing. So could it be that a little bit of truth is coming out of the Vatican? They're kind of releasing just enough to get people back into the churches?
I think
he's gone way further than what he needs to do just to bring people back to church, I think.
Yeah.
I think he means
well. I don't think it's the publicity thing. I think it's one of those things like that. I think, Pat, you made a comment on Facebook that, you know, you hope somebody's testing, you know, tasting his food for him. Because I really think that when you go up against the powers that have held the church captive for so many decades, and it's all wrapped in money, I think, you know, you become an endangered species. So, you know, whether you're a politician that goes into Congress thinking you're going to change the world, or you're the Pope that, you know, thinks you can reshape the world, I think you can pretty well count that there's going to be some evil forces that are going to be looking for your head on a platter.
Pope Benedict contacted President Obama about, I hate it when I do this, the gentleman in Georgia who was executed a couple of years ago that everybody...
Troy Davis?
Yes, Troy Davis. And the Pope Benedict, who doesn't have any of this guy's street cred, he contacted the president, and he really woke up a lot of Catholics in the United States. Now, of course, sadly, nothing happened. President Obama did not interfere in that execution, and the execution went forward. Pope Benedict was not radical. He was not radicalized. You know, this guy is radical. This guy, if this guy says, and he does say to people, stop paying allegiance and stop paying attention to the powerful who are hurting the poor. I mean, if he tells people, and they love him, they do, and he tells people, don't vote for someone who's going to, like the Catholic bishops have tried to do in the United States before and been shut down by the Pope. Now these guys aren't being shut down.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I mean, if for every Billy Graham out there who could tell you how to vote based on gay rights or some other thing, there's the head of the Holy Roman Empire there, you know?
Well, maybe, you know, I'm looking at it as I don't believe anything happens by accident, number one, and number two, whatever good can come from this, I'm all for. You know, I hope good comes from this, and that's what I strive for, and that's what I intend when I hear things like this, and when I hear the Pope saying things like that. So I don't know what y'all's take is or what faith you are, but I believe it's everybody's faith to lift up and give a hand up to the poor and to the needy and to the homeless. I mean, that's written about in every religion.
Well, you know, and be good stewards of the earth, and you know, there's a lot of things that have not been focused on over the past decades, of whether it's Catholic Church leadership or, you know, other political leadership, that, you know, there's plenty of room for change and improvement in how we treat each other and how we treat Mother Earth and beyond, and, you know, it's, if we believe that we can't do it, then we won't do it. And I think, you know, people like us, we keep believing that we can treat each other with respect and treat our world with respect and, you know, that we just need to keep, you know, keep singing the song and somebody's going to join along.
Well, someone locally knew that I was going to be doing a show about this. And they contacted me earlier. Let me see if I can find their message. And they're already doing such great work. And this is out of the not a religious community per se, but out of the local pagan community, mm-hmm. which they've really established some incredible alliances, which has been very surprising, but they said, I'll just read you a couple excerpts of what they've written about. I'm taking the extreme step of contacting each and every blah, blah. Oh, not that part. Hang on. Let me get to what she actually wrote today. She has started an outreach to the homeless in regards to just getting them toiletries. I don't think a lot of them wanted to deal with the food so much as they wanted to deal with getting the homeless toiletries and things that they need just for day-to-day living. So they've established alliances, which I think is probably the most important way to start in your community. Isn't that what you all would think, is establish those with other groups?
Yeah.
So she said... it's called Family Partnerships. It's in a county, and it's called Hands of the Goddess. She gave me some links. She said, we've been doing a variety of projects and activities for the past 3 years or so, with the primary focus of our efforts being a local homeless women's shelter. We have recently expanded our focus to include other homeless in the Newport Richey area. We've forged strong relationships with family, an organization called Family Partnerships. Now, a lot of these organizations that are already doing the work in our communities here in Florida, I mean, we really are part of the Bible Belt, but most of them are faith-based, and most of them are Christian, and there are a few that are Catholic, but most are Christian. Prior to our association with Family Partnerships, we collected toiletries from those who wished to donate, with some donations coming in from as far away as California. Now, in addition to those private donations, we receive a great number of toiletries from Family Partnerships. So they go to the Salvation Army, who they also have another alliance with, and they have a daily feeding program there. And it's just, this has kind of exploded, and they've asked for my assistance. So I'm really, you know, wondering, you know, exactly what my place is in the community in regards to this, because I knew I had to get involved. And we also have a women's health, a women's veterans homeless shelter in Tampa called the Athena House, which I've been trying to get to get more information about it. I believe they are online. So with all of this happening and with the need being so great, as I was explaining to this lady, I said, I don't even think it matters anymore what faith we are, as long as we're in there, you know, and we've got our hands busy and we're doing the work. And we should all be able to work with one another, regardless of, you know, where we're sitting faith-wise. And a lot of the, some of the faith-based would probably not agree with that, because they use that as primarily to proselytize. But
I was sitting at a meeting of, back before equal rights was passed in Maine, I was sitting at a meeting of people, and I repeat some stories in awe of the fact that I lived through them. So Diane knows one of my favorites, but this one is one of those stories that I can't believe I heard it with my own ears, and that I get to tell this story every now and then. But I sat in a room filled with people, and some of the people were against equal rights for people regardless of their sexual orientation. And one guy said, if I could make the kind of money you people make feeding the poor, I might not have to pick on the gays.
Oh, wow.
So attacking other people is a revenue stream for a lot of these people. And it's the Jerry Maguire reality of the world. Show me the money. It's the money. Attacking gays, there's money in that. Attacking the poor, there's money in that. And so I don't have a faith. I don't believe in God. I'm not saying that there isn't a God, because I don't know anything, so I can't be certain of a negative either. But I don't care who's willing to help, as long as the help doesn't come with so many strings attached that the person dies of strangulation instead of starvation, you know?
Right.
And so I think that's one of the reasons I'm so happy about the Pope, is because I'm not normal. I'm unique. More people in this world believe in a God than don't believe in one. So if we get some of these God leaders to turn around and stop being godly, then, you know, yay, that makes our agnostic atheist crowd having a little more help in this thing.
And I think it's a way that, awareness can be increased. I mean, when the Pope says something, many, many more people are going to hear him than, you know, the people that are going to listen to this show, which, you know, when the Pope says something, it's documented in newspapers all around the world. So if you're right, if he says something, it's really it's profound, and it's spread around. And anything that increases awareness of what's happening and why this in so many cities has become the invisible problem, or they want to make it invisible. We don't want to make it invisible. We want to tell people, you know, you're either going to be this or you're going to help. You know?
Yeah, and you know, that's not an exaggeration, Anita.
you know, sadly, I could go to any city or town or rural area and find families and youth who are homeless, in addition to the single male adult who, you know, the stereotype that has been etched in everybody's mind. But it's in every single community. So
right.
If anybody is thinking that, yeah, that's a problem in New York City and Chicago, but it's not, you know, out here in my nice little suburb, you're wrong. And you know, the sooner you realize that you've got kids in your school, for example, I've noticed a great movement lately that really needs to be widespread, sadly, that on weekends and for holidays, like our recent Christmas holiday or whatever we want to call that holiday that we just celebrated, it's just kids, when they leave school and when they're homeless or very, very poor, school is where they get their meals. So when they're gone, for whether it's the weekend or 10 days off for, you know, winter break or whatever, these kids don't have food in their house. And now they've been doing these backpack programs where, you know, some good individuals in the community volunteer to provide and pack the little victuals that will help the families get through the weekends and holidays. And sad to say that we have to do that and that it's so necessary, but wonderful that, you know, all kinds of groups have really stepped up to making sure that there's food around on the weekends. And, you know, so I would encourage your listeners to check into the backpack program. And if you don't have one in your community and you really like kids should be able to eat on weekends, that would be a great starting point to help local families, you know, so that they can endure homelessness.
There's another organization here in Brooksville that's been talking, I've been talking to a few of the organizers. They literally, in the Brooksville area, Hernando County, which is a lot of woods and very rural where I live,
yeah.
A lot of the people are living out in the woods because and they're doing this on the down low.
Yeah,
you know, they don't want their children to be taken from them, so they're literally camping out in the woods. And some local people that I know, and they're keeping this very quiet, and they do not want to take money. They take donations of camping gear, anything that people can use in a camping situation, lanterns, blankets, firewood. That's the kind of donations that they take, and they take them right out to the people that are out in the woods. And I guess only a few people know where these sites are that can take these items to them.
Yeah.
But this is what's going on in the rural communities where there's actually, I wouldn't call them Occupy-type movements. They're just people living in the woods because they don't have shelter. So they've created their own shelter. I would imagine many of them have tents. I hope many, you know, they have tents.
It's cold. It's, you know, I mean, Florida can get really cold or the weather can get really nasty. And, you know, anybody that thinks that kind of living isn't, you know, a rugged way to live, especially for those who are, you know, physically and mentally challenged or young or, you know, Yeah. So, you know, this has become the, you know, the fact that there are not enough shelters for adults or kids in this country is something that we've not really addressed, or that there needs to be shelter. I mean, like, why do we need to have all these shelters, and how much has the federal government gotten out of the housing business since the early 70s? And, you know, why people aren't a little bit outraged by the fact that, you know, that this problem has soared instead of, you know, just kind of trickled along. It's just mind-boggling.
What about the empty houses? What if all those empty houses that are foreclosed, pushers were just
communist.
Opened up?
Communist, socialist, communist. That's what's wrong with you. You hate capitalism. What's wrong with you?
Yeah.
We can't be given those houses. Those houses eventually are going to have some sort of value to somebody, or the bank is going to be able to let them fall right through their foundations, and then the bank will be compensated by their insurance company. You don't even understand. You hate America. That's what's wrong with you.
Yeah, she's anti-bank, that's for sure.
Yeah. And, you know, then you'd have to get people to fix them up. And, well, who's going to do that? That's another one of those socialist programs like the New Deal.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, the loud clamor against common sense, that common sense question you just asked, Anita, the loud clamor against it, happening.
Yeah.
So where do we see ourselves in 5 years? Because we're getting to the end, but I just wanted to see what kind of goals the two of you had, and where do you think the homeless situation is going to be in 5 years?
Well, you know, when I started on the road 9 years ago, after, you know, running shelters and doing other work in this field, I never in my wildest dreams would have imagined that the numbers of homeless kids in schools would have gone up to way over a million, and the problem no closer to being solved. So I'm going to hesitate to even say where I think I'm going to be in 5 years, because it has defied my expectations in a bad way, and I'd like to think that we're going to turn this around, but I've yet to see any really big signs that it's going to happen. So I'm going to take a pass on that. But I'll toss it over to Babe Pat there and see what she has to say.
Okay.
I'm hoping that Diane Nyland is so well known for her advocacy for children that I'm her food taster.
you just want my food. That's all you want.
So tell us about the next step. What's your plans for a next trip or cross country tour under the banner Babes of Wrath?
We got to work on that.
Yeah,
I got a new book coming out. Yeah, I got a new book coming out this winter. She's got her video coming out, but I don't think spring should go by without us doing something.
No, I think we need to be set loose on another part of the country that we haven't been in, and I'm going to be in the Midwest area and between New York and head westward to Illinois and maybe beyond. There's plenty of places that need us to this. So
I'm
sorry.
She's been everywhere.
Oh, really? What are areas that you have not covered as thoroughly, though, where you would probably go next?
The Babes haven't been to the Northwest. Or
the Midwest. Or the Midwest.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm sure the problems are big time in both of those places. But, again, you know, you're going into the Midwest. A lot of that area is pretty rural, unless you're going into the big cities like Chicago and Denver and, you know. So they're, you know, are they going to be out in the open? Are they going to be hidden? And
maybe what we should be doing is the Wake the Bleep Up Tour, you know, and not be talking. We're not talking to the homeless or even about that, but it wouldn't matter. We could go to the smallest rural town and find homeless people, but we got to wake up Middle America. First of all, you're vanishing. There isn't a Middle America anymore.
You don't want to know that, but you are.
But beyond that, your enemy isn't somebody picking your tomatoes or cleaning the bathroom at the Hilton. Your enemy is not another poor person. They're not your enemy. And that's the social fabric. You guys all working together, you know, America. You working together, you're what makes this country great. Not the leeches that siphon off your productivity. You're 40 times as productive as you were 50 years ago, but you effectively make half the minimum wage. You know, I mean, wake up, America.
And, you know, I keep hearing from certain people, too, this other, it's a fallacy, it's a fable. oh, our government is broke. I keep saying our government's broke. Our government misappropriates the money it has. It puts its money in wars and all kinds of other things, building bombers, making sure we have intercontinental ballistic missiles and nuclear power plants, and it doesn't feed the people.
Plus the economy is a bunch of blips now in a computer. There's no currency. There's no gold standard. There's no silver standard. There's no money. So to say the government's broke is ridiculous. We're not broke as long as you know, this synthetic system, lost zeitgeist, you know. The synthetic system keeps us buoyant. It's not about money. And by being afraid of deficits, all we're doing is we're fearing investing in each other as people. If you gave a minimum wage employee $15 and that person worked at Walmart, the money wouldn't make it out of the building. They'd buy themselves food, for God's sake, you know. They'd sell their prescriptions at the pharmacy. You put the money in the pockets of the people at the bottom, and even if you go deficit spending to do it, you've stimulated the economy. It's all BS. And they want us to think we're not smart enough to know better. And they want us to think that things like economics are so complicated that we can't figure them out. And America's got to stop falling for the fact that the government wants us to believe we're stupid.
Right.
Well, yeah. I mean, and then you just have to turn to the white Santa Claus story and go, you know, how many people are believing this? And so the learning curve is steep. But we will continue to do everything we can in our power to enlighten the enlightenable and to plow over the ones that are going to get in the way.
Right. Well, I want to thank you all so much for being on the show. And how can people get in touch with you?
Well, if they go
to... They really want to get in touch with Diane.
Well, and then if they ever want to get in touch with you, I'm certainly happy to pass things along. But if they go to the website hearus.us, and that's HEARUS.US, you know, they can contact me through that. And it's pretty easy to do, and you can see what we're up to. And there's stuff about the Babes of Wrath there, and you know, we can go from there.
And Pat, how can they get in touch with you?
Well, they really can just go to Diane. I mean, I can't send enough people to Diane. Go watch the trailers for her videos. If you're afraid of poverty and you're afraid of homelessness, don't beat yourself up about it. You know, you're only human. Just go watch her videos. You'll get an understanding without having to go outside your comfort zone. And I'd much rather you learned it through there than tortured yourself over your comfort zone. Folks can write to me if they want at patlamarsh@hotmail.com, but I really go to Diane's website. It's wonderful, and you'll learn so much. Hearus.us.
And if anybody didn't get any of that and you want to send me an email, I'll pass it on to either one of these ladies.
Yeah, and Epic Journey 10. Epic Journey 10 on Facebook.
Yeah, AnitaStewart@gmail.com is the easiest way to reach me. And are you all available for, like, speaking engagements, you know? Homelessness anywhere?
Great. We love it all the time, so yeah.
But anyway, I want to say good night. Thank you so much for being on the show, and we hope to have you back again. And any questions, anybody can reach me at the email address I gave, AnitaStewart@gmail.com. Check us out at wisewomenmedia.blogspot.com. And just remember that this is independent media. You are the listeners. You own this show, so you must fund it because I don't take any corporate sponsors. So hope to hear from you all soon, and we'll see you all next week. And thanks again. Good night.
Thank you, Anita.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right,
are
we done?
I think so.
That was the show, folks. Thank you so much for listening in, and please be sure to viral the show around and let other people listen. If it is outside their comfort zone, have them go to hearus,
Again, hearus, hearus.us, to see more information about what Diane and Pat are doing to help the homeless. And they'll come to your community if you want them to. So I'm going to close with a song by Michael Franti, What I've Seen. Be sure to check us out at wisewomenmedia.blogspot.com and hit us up at the GoFundMe link. And we'll see everybody next week with a special guest, Cindy Sheehan. So we'll see you on the airwaves. And here's Michael Franti and Spearhead.